Paybacks are hell. Tony from the land of baloney gets grilled on the Senate floor. Just in time for Pride Month, the world's largest sacred heart flag is unfurled in Kentucky. Plus, Catholic men in New Orleans face off against a Pride parade as pro-Palestinian protesters block the Pridesters in Philly. Meanwhile, from coast to coast, thousands of Catholics take to the streets of America to worship the Eucharistic Lord. Are we looking at the end of the world? Or is this the greatest comeback in Christian history? Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Michael Matt, and this is The Remnant Underground. Okay. Now, tonight, let's talk. Let's talk some strategy, shall we? Coming off last week's show, and more importantly, coming off the Chartres pilgrimage in France a week and a half ago, I don't know, I'm really fired up about our prospects, about the future, about the movement, about the youth and vitality of the movement. So I'm going to try one more time tonight, if you'll bear with me, to really try to put what we're doing, what we're trying to do, in a more positive setting, not for the sake of positivity itself, but for the sake of energizing our base, to convince all of us, all the clans worldwide, not to give up, not to give in, not to become so fearful and intimidated by the enemy that you give up the fight. You know, Jordan Peterson, I was watching one of his programs the other day, and he was talking about climate alarmists, climate hysterics and all this, and now he's calling them apocalypse mongers. And when he said that, I thought, this is interesting. Of course, he's talking about the fact that on the left, when it comes to the climate hysterics, they're always predicting the end of history and the end of the world, and they're using fear tactics and all that to push a certain agenda, right? And I couldn't help but in fairness admit that we've got a little of that going on our side of the aisle too. Folks using the apocalypse, we could call them apocalypse mongers, in a way that I don't think quite fits into the idea, the teaching of the church on Catholic action. They're using the apocalypse, they're using the signs of the time for all the right reasons. They really are terrible things happening in the world today. But they're pointing to these things, and they're saying it's the end of the world, just like the climate alarmists are doing. Look at this prophecy, look at that prophecy, right? It goes on and on. All my life, I've been hearing this about the prophecies, this prophecy, that prophecy. And if I interpret prophecy correctly, I can tell you when the end is going to be. Well, I thought that the Catholic position was we know neither the day nor the hour, right? I thought we weren't supposed to actually know specifically when this was going to happen. I thought, in my reading of Our Lady of Fatima's message, for example, if you do this, if you pray the rosary, if you make the first Fridays and first Saturdays, that these things may not come about, that there's a reason to continue to fight, both spiritually and temporally, so that these things don't come about. There's always a chance, right? But I'm getting the attitude now that from, again, not from a lot of traditionalists, but from some traditionalists, that only a faithless person with more or less a Marxist attitude could possibly argue that, humanly speaking, there's any reason to continue to fight. And I'm going to be quite frank about this. I hate that attitude because it's saying, you're wasting your time. Don't fight. Give up the fight. And as far as I can tell, that's exactly what the forces of darkness would want us to do. For all the right reasons, lay down the sword. Stop fighting, right? This makes no sense to me. I don't see how we can possibly hold that position and still claim to be soldiers of Jesus Christ. Soldiers of Jesus Christ. I don't understand. And I will tell you this, friends, if you'll hear me out. I honestly have been at this all my life. And I believe there has never been a better time than right now for all of us to organize, to unite, to fight back. Believe it or not, I really believe it. I know it's dark over there, but wow, it is so dark. There's nothing left but the dawn, right? We've reached the darkest point of the night. The dawn is next. It's the way it always works. And let's face it. Let's be honest. There's nothing but chaos in hell. There's nothing but chaos in the camps of the enemies of God right now. We give them too much power. We give them too much credit for being organized and systematic and absolutely everything's laid out to perfection and how they're going to crush Christianity and they're going to crush the children of light and all of these. No, there's no sustainability over there. So right now, for example, because it's kind of an amusing example, with pro-Palestinian protesters clashing with gay pride parades. Check this out. Palestine will be forever. on, Elf. You know, this is pretty funny. We signed you on that one. But this really is a microcosm of what's going on everywhere. It's just clash and chaos, you know? Christ is removed, and the result is chaos everywhere. And we need to see this opportunity to strike back hard, but not stupid. Not overstating things, right? Strike back hard, but not stupid, against a scattered enemy army that is in total disarray and half the time is at each other's throats. Now, speaking of which, our sponsor tonight is the Catholic Identity Conference, and I'm really eager to encourage you. We have a few seats left, and I do mean a very few seats left for this conference in September, but it's going to be all about this. Teaser. I know you said we're not supposed to say anything about this yet, but next week we will be announcing another incredible addition to the speakers roster for the CIC. I know it's hard to improve on what's going on already. It's going to be great. I can't say yet because it's not confirmed, but stay tuned and it will be worth the wait. So I hope you'll join us. I'll be emceeing that thing. It's going to be a fantastic conference. That's the Catholic Identity Conference in Pittsburgh. It's in September, at the end of September. So click the link below for more info on that. So now let's look at the evidence. The evidence of what I'm trying to say here, that the enemies of God are actually way more in disarray and confusion than many people want us to believe. Happy Pride Month, right? We're in June. Well, that seems to be sort of falling apart. I've never seen so much fatigue over Pride Month. I heard that DeSantis down in Florida is canceling Pride flags on the bridges. I hear Target's kind of pulling back a little bit because they were losing too much revenue for families that are like, you know what? Forget it. We'll shop somewhere else. That's kind of a fun thing to see. June is the month of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. That is resonating with people all over the world. At the end of the show, I'll show you some video to prove that. But I'm really proud now to be shooting this first Remnant Underground on the Feast of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Thank you very much. Now, I'm sorry if this offends the LGBTS crowd, but June has been dedicated to the Sacred Heart of Jesus since August 31st, 1670. Yeah, the year 1670, actually, following the revelations to St. Margaret Mary Alacoque at Paray-le-Monial in France. I was just there last year. I took a group of pilgrims there. It's doing quite well. Thriving, in fact. So I know the LGBTS crowd likes to run around in their birthday suits. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, you might want to head over to remnant-tv.com because most of this is going to have to get edited out for YouTube. We're making and thank you to the tens of thousands of you who have made the switch from YouTube over to remnant-tv. That's our primary home. That's where most of our stuff goes up first. But in any case, these folks, they like to run around in their birthday suits claiming that June is theirs. But of course, we know, and we need to proclaim this, that that's a load of fake and gay news. And by the way, you know, speaking to our LGBTBS friends, if y'all really want to be treated better, I have an idea. I know what let's do. Maybe you could stop running around exposing your private parts to our kids in the streets.
You know, there's been a lot of outrage on social media about this year's Pride Parade in Toronto. If you saw the graphic images or attended the parade, you know what I'm talking about. It seems that certain participants went way over the top and walked the parade completely naked, exposing themselves for many to see, including kids. Now, is that even legal?
Now, what is wrong with these guys? You don't have to be a Bible-thumping Christian to be just a tiny bit disturbed by grown-ass men running around naked in the streets in front of kids, right? So maybe if you want to like shore up your PR a little bit, guys, you could put some clothes on. That might be an idea. But here's the thing, from our point of view, you know what I'm kind of tired of? I'm tired of all the pearl clutching over these nut jobs. Because that's what they thrive on, right? That's what they want. And the only reason they think they're so progressive is because they don't know anything about history. They always show up in the last days of any great civilization, right before the civilization falls. Here they come in their birthday suits again, thinking they somehow reinvented the wheel. Every student of history has seen these guys, has studied these guys 100 different times in the pages of history books, right? They always show up. And today, they are as enlightened and as progressive as old Caligula himself, right? Running around in their birthday suits, dating their horses, doing whatever obscene things come to their childish little minds. So thank you, guys. Thanks so much. You're so impressive, and I'm so scandalized. Thank you, moral miscreants of America, for making prophets of our fathers, because that's all you've done. They warned us you were coming, our fathers. They told us you were coming. That's what traditional Catholicism was all about. The emasculization of the mass, the emasculization of the priesthood, the emasculization of men, the fall of the family, right? And what do you think happens at the end of that? Gay pride parades happen. We were warned about this. We always knew you guys were coming. So we're not shocked or surprised that you're here. Again, our fathers warned us. You were coming, and here you are, confirming everything that the little Christians you love to mock, confirming everything that those Christians always said about good and evil, what we always knew to be true about God, family, morality, and truth. You and your birthday suits, you're confirming it all. That's all you're doing. We're not scandalized, we're not shocked by your little parades. We know why you're here. In fact, good Christians, sincere Christians, can only feel sorrow in their hearts for you. I don't know if you never had mothers, you never had fathers, most of you. Your families are broken up. Well, that wasn't your fault, right? It blew up, it destroyed you. You are the victims, you are the casualties of this war on God and war on the family. Desperate attention hounds who have nothing to live for and whose miserable existence only strengthens our resolve to restore all things in Christ. Because you know what? Gay pride, it signals that the end of the godless madness is near. As I said before, this is it. This is the darkness right before the dawn. Grown men walking around the streets naked in front of little kids. Nobody wants that. Change is right around the corner because this is out of hand now. It's all coming down. Part of these best laid plans of mice and men. And overall, generally speaking, the enemy now has got nothing. Any society that would defend that has got nothing, friends. Absolutely nothing that will ever sustain it. It's over. They got nothing but murder, which is death. They got nothing but suicide, euthanasia, infanticide. You see, it's all about death, right? And then wretched morality, the death of the soul, all of which is 100% unsustainable. As history has shown us again and again, this little time period of decadence and wretchedness is short-lived. It cannot last. It's burning out right now, as we're going to show and talk about, hopefully prove, tonight on this show. Because we, and by we I mean those who are trying to be part of this remnant, those who are trying to be part of the children of God, the army of God, what do we have? We have God. We have hope. We have family. We have joy. We have life. We have clothing that we wear. We know what sex we are. We know what bathroom to use. And life, future, the future is ours. I'm looking at my son, Walter, right over here, expecting his second child in November, right? It's so happy. It's so wonderful. The little baby that we introduced, I'm going to see if I can convince Walter to throw maybe a couple of frames up of little Evie, the first child that was born, making everybody so happy. New life, right? The normal, natural way that God created. One of my nieces, get this, she's probably going to be angry at Uncle Mike for saying this, but one of my dear nieces announced last night, and she is the most happy, wonderful person. She is expecting her 16th baby, and she couldn't be more happy. And all her little her older children were at my house last night talking about this, how happy they were to be welcoming the 16th child in their family. And that's not an anomaly. That's happening throughout the entire traditional Catholic movement right now. It's one of the things that's really, really disturbing about what Pope Francis did in trying to shut down those Latin Mass centers where families like that is independent of the state, self-sufficient, loving God, loving each other, the nucleus of a Christian society, where those families found themselves, where they were thriving, being shut down by the Holy Father. This is bad news, right? But that's still, no matter what Francis does, this is happening all over the world right now. Parish life abounds. Families, children abound. Here was the scene, in fact, just last week in my little parish here in Flyover Land, Minnesota. I think there probably were about 400, right, Walter? 400 at that Mass?
Yeah.
And that's just one of three. On any given Sunday, it's traditional Latin Mass every day, but three in that particular parish, 400 people, mostly young families.
I ask you now to please kneel and to join me in this act of reparation. O Sacred Heart of Jesus, animated with a desire to repair the outrages unceasingly offered to thee, we prostrate before thy throne of mercy, and in the name of all mankind, pledge our love and fidelity to thee.
We showed you the same thing is happening over in France, parishes all across the world. The future is ours, friends, as we ran these cameras in Nantes at the Paternity of St. Peter Parish at St. Clement. Here was a scene, just briefly, we could take a look at it again to show you the consistency. It's happening everywhere. So when you look at these images, and I know I'm not breaking any news here, y'all are seeing this all over the country, all over the world. When you look at these images and you see this happening, how is it that the future could possibly not belong to the children of light? Physically, literally, they're the ones with the future. They're the ones with the children. They're the ones with the babies, right? They're the people who know which pronouns to use and teach their children which pronouns to use, to know which bathrooms to use, because you know why? God is in his heaven, and he will not be mocked much longer. So what's the answer? To be afraid, clutch the pearls, look for the asteroid, just talk constantly about the apocalypse, or to stand up and roar back the truth, the love, the goodness, the light, in the face of this darkness? We're not afraid of death. We're not afraid of viruses. We're not vaccinated, and we never will be. And guess what? Come to think of it now, I have no regrets. Isn't that amazing? I'm not vaccinated. None of my kids are vaccinated. Nobody I know in my parish is vaccinated. And we have no regrets. That's something. Now, a few weeks ago, we saw them cranking it all up again, didn't we? Here in the run-up to this next election. There's no way they're going to win unless they do something dramatic, either a world war or another pandemic, right? So they started talking about the next pandemic. Very scary, very terrifying, why it's called the bird flu. So break out the PPE. We're going to need some more masks. Oh, gee, I sure hope we have enough ventilators this time around. Right? They actually tried it again. For a minute. But did you notice? They've already backed down.
Just a few weeks into this outbreak, notably that this has not been a public health issue in the way that we might have been concerned initially. Pasteurization remains effective treatment to limit the virus spread into milk. Humans are not getting sick from this virus.
Because the thing is, we're not toddlers. Some of us were aware of it from the beginning, others were not. But the point is, everybody's learned a lesson. Now people are not toddlers who can be indefinitely controlled by scary stories about monsters in the closet and monsters under the bed, right? It can only work so many times. It can only go back to that well so many times before people eventually grow up and say, enough already, put a sock in it, right? And I think that's exactly where we are right now. Think about the losses on the other side, the globalist side of things. I mean, we talk about Francis. This is the most lame duck pope in history. The only people who listen to Francis the globalist are the folks who aren't actually Catholics, like Pelosi and Biden and, you know, characters like that. But then moving on down the line, Bill Gates, he lost everything, certainly his credibility. He even finally, in the end, lost his wife over this experiment. The great Klaus Schwab is retiring. He's done. The WHO treaty was dead on arrival. The pandemic preparedness was dead on arrival. It didn't happen. Dr. Fauci's reign of terror is over. The radical left was left holding the bag in a big way and looking more stupid than ever for having trusted the science. Oh, I'm sorry, in this case, trusted the science. So I rest my case, right? I mean, that think about the cringe factor. Think if you had been one of those dudes out there singing that song so completely, just drinking from vats of the globalist Kool-Aid, that you stood out there and made a complete ass of yourselves, you know? And now you just look ridiculous. So that's what the left has done even to their own. And you know what the biggest casualty of all of this was, in my opinion? The biggest casualty was the science. The science. I mean, do you have any intention of ever trusting the science? Again, we didn't trust it to begin with too much, but would you ever be so ridiculously stupid to trust it again? Like we said last week, a guy like Jeff Sachs, who's on the left, who's a Bernie Sanders advisor, Pope Francis advisor, although I think he's moving away from a lot of that, but he certainly is no conservative. He's out there right now publicly lamenting the fact that he ever trusted the science in the first place. And he is an important witness precisely because he had been running with one of them. So even their own are like, oh my gosh, never again am I going to trust the science. Here's Jeff Sachs.
Everyone wanted to know where this virus came from. I read it and I went around knowingly telling everyone, oh, it's natural. You have to read Proximal Origins of SARS-CoV-2.
Because never occurred to you they would lie in Nature Medicine.
Because this is the top of the heap of the scientific journals and the scientific establishment. The top. Nature. You know, there are two great science magazines in the world that have a history that is so deep. And I was so smug, you know. Oh, you didn't read Nature, SARS-CoV-2, Proximal Origins, because you believe that stuff when it's written there. It's a fraud, that paper.
Now, if even one of you says, don't fall for Jeff Sachs, I'm gonna go crazy. That's not the point. On this show, we do not set these people up as role models or as theologians or philosophers. We set them up as witnesses. And he is witness number one for the prosecution of Tony Fauci, as far as I'm concerned, because of where he was at the time. So you don't need to consult conservatives anymore. That's the beautiful thing of where we are. That's part of the reason why I'm saying there is so much reason right now to stay engaged. You don't even have to consult your old conservative sources. You can go to the liberals or the people in the middle. Suddenly everyone is questioning the science, even, ironically enough, the scientists themselves.
I mean, I was upset with CDC when I left because they stopped tracking people that were infected that were previously vaccinated. So if you didn't track it, well, because then you couldn't report that there were people vaccinated and got infected.
But no, wait, why did they stop tracking it?
Because I think there was a decision not to do anything that made the vaccine sound like it didn't work. I remember Biden saying, you know, this is a epidemic of the unvaccinated. When I was Hogan's chief public health advisor in Maryland after I left CDC, I was saying, wait a minute, 2/3 of the people that I'm seeing infected in Maryland have been vaccinated. I mean, the president of the United States said it. Biden said this was an epidemic of the unvaccinated. You know, you'd interview patient after patient after patient that did not have COVID, but are very sick,
right?
You would say very sick long COVID patients, and it's all from the vaccine.
So then what about the doctors? Because there are a lot of doctors now coming forward who really, really were upset with what happened and how they were treated. Doctors, some of them are even currently grilling Dr. Fauci on the House floor. What are these guys then? More conspiracy theorists, more science deniers, more haters, or are they just all racists?
Dr. Fauci, did you ever treat a patient for COVID during the pandemic?
I was part of a team that was at the NIH that took care. We didn't take care of many of them.
Okay, so not hands-on. Got it. Thank you. You said in an interview that you gave as part of an audiobook written by Michael Spector that you believed an institutional should make it hard for people to live their lives so they'd feel pressured to get vaccinated. Could we run the audio clip on that, please?
You think can be done about it? I have to say that I don't see a big solution other than some sort of mandatory vaccination. I know federal officials don't like to use that term.
Once people feel empowered and protected legally, you are going to have schools, universities, and colleges are going to say, you want to come to this college, buddy? You're going to get vaccinated. Lady, you're going to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Big corporations like Amazon and Facebook and all of those others are going to say, you want to work for us? You get vaccinated. And it's been proven that when you make it difficult for people in their lives, they lose their ideological bullshit and they get vaccinated.
Thank you. Are all objections to COVID vaccinations ideological bullshit, Dr. Fauci?
No, they're not, and that's not what I was referring to.
Well, in reference to making it hard for people to get education, traveling, working, I'd say it very much was in context.
So much for trusting the science, friends. This is really important because these people are nuts, and as long as you let crazy people get away with crazy stuff, they're going to keep being crazy. So they're going to try all this again. But if we can just keep pushing this, we will never trust the science again. If we make science the casualty of the COVID era, there might be a chance. Because there's a lot of powerful people that agree with us. So moving on, what's the next emergency that science is going to save us from? The crisis that science is going to protect us from? Well, of course, it's the climate crisis. So I have a question for you. Are you going to trust the science when it comes to the climate emergency?
Climate change is having a disproportionate effect on the physical and mental health of Black communities. Black Americans are more likely than white Americans to live in areas and housing that increase their susceptibility to climate-related health issues. And 65% of Black Americans report feeling anxious about climate change's impact.
You just can't make it up. I can't get past that, dude. I mean, thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Levine. And I'm sure the Black community of your imagination deeply appreciates your soft bigotry of low expectations there. But in the real world, I have a feeling the Black community has had enough of your BS, quite frankly.
Black America, I always say, we were very much the lab mice for our government, right? We were the people that were tested, tried, and said, okay, this was successful. The deterioration of the Black family. Family is what is at the nucleus. And I always think when I see a government policy or a government freakout that's taking place, I say, what does this have to do with family? And then it all starts to lock into place, right? Then you start to realize that the climate change lobby is currently telling children that it would be irresponsible for them to start families. In fact, they're giving out awards to people. Harry and Meghan recently received an award for agreeing to only have two children because the climate is a disaster and it would be irresponsible to have more children when the world's going to be over in 10 years, right? Why start a family? There's no point.
But it doesn't matter because the folks who are still buying this stuff, who are still drinking this Kool-Aid, they're going to say, yeah, but Candace Owens, man, she is not a scientist. And we've got to trust the scientists on climate because it's, you know, science. Okay, fair enough. So what would you say to a uber left-wing, not a conservative at all, but a leftist evolutionary scientist who co-founded the radical leftist Greenpeace organization? What about him? Would he be lefty and scientist enough for you?
Now, you're shown graphs like this with y-axes of only 1.4 degrees. In order to make it look like there's been this huge increase in global temperature, when in fact, if you put it on a scale that's like between -10 and 100 degrees Fahrenheit, you can hardly notice the 1 degree rise in temperature. This has not been a very significant change in global temperature. The last 300 years is when it started, at the peak of, or the depths of the Little Ice Age, we certainly had nothing to do with the fact that it started warming again 300 years ago after many hundred years of cooling coming out of the medieval warm period into the Little Ice Age.
Uh-oh, clutch your pearls, ladies. Another lefty who's done trusting the science. Now what are you going to do? Who are you going to trust? How many of these guys got to come forward and blow the whistle before you go, huh, maybe I'm being lied to about all this stuff, even the political science now. Let's just touch on that one and we'll move on tonight, because we're also supposed to trust the political science. I mean, democracy, for example, is on the line in Ukraine. I mean, we need to defend the Ukrainian people because every single Ukrainian man out there is fighting for his life right now. That seems to be true, but maybe not quite in the way you think. Look, kids, the press gangs are back. Now, we've been at this thing in Ukraine for how long has it been? I don't even know now. Is it going on 2 years? I don't know, probably in March, but been at this from the beginning, this farce in Ukraine. I just can't believe there's anybody left in this audience who still thinks that Joe Biden and Barack Obama and Victoria Nuland's war for the expansion of NATO over in Ukraine, that's about democracy. I mean, you know it isn't, right? You know that Ukraine has been like Hunter Biden territory forever. You know it's thoroughly corrupt. You know that, right? You're not buying this, are you? I mean, no wonder now when you see things like that where they're actually press ganging people, pressing young men into service onto those vans, which means death in Ukraine. No wonder so many folks, again, not your uber conservatives, but folks in the center to center left, are out there crying foul.
One of the most shocking things, just as someone who lived in Washington, to me is if you ask any of the senators, who voted to keep this war going with U.S. tax dollars, how many of your beloved Ukrainians have been killed? They have no idea and they have no interest in knowing.
And they don't care at all. And sometimes they say they don't care. Mitt Romney said, it's greatest bargain, no American lives. Dick Blumenthal said the same thing, basically. This is a great bargain, no American lives.
Isn't that evil? I mean, at some point, it's certainly hypocritical. They're telling us we're doing this for Ukraine, for our friends in Ukraine, the standard bearers of democracy. But also, don't you have an obligation to kind of care about the people you kill?
I remember this is Biden's project, Biden's war. You know, in collaboration with his friends over at the WEF and in Davos, it's their war. This isn't a real war. It has nothing to do with democracy. It has nothing to do with protecting Ukrainians or Ukraine. It has everything to do with NATO. As we said from the beginning, that's all it ever was. And then you just look back at the sheer idiocy of what they're asking us to believe. That you need to defend, we need to spend billions of dollars, billions of treasure, U.S. treasure, to defend Ukraine's borders, her sacred borders, right? Her sovereignty. While we leave our own borders wide open. Now, I know this point has been made a lot of times before, but we got to let it sink in a little bit. It's absolutely insane that they would ask us to be, or that they would think of us as so stupid that we would believe in their Ukraine project while they open up our country. And they're not opening up our country to, you know, little Mexican guys who are looking for a job because things are tough down there. They're opening up our country to any criminal who wants to come up. That's the problem. As Catholics, as Christians, we have no problem with the other. We have no problem with migrants, as I've said on this show so many times. My grandfather came from Europe. He was an immigrant, right? What we have a problem with is the illegal, no borders attitude of these globalists who want to crush our country by letting not people from Mexico, but Chinese nationals and people from the Middle East and terrorists and drug lords and any other kind of gang members come pouring over our border. Let's not forget. Don't lose sight of the arguments. We have no problem with the other as Christians. Pope Francis. I think you know that. all these Catholic bishops who are talking about, we must be welcoming to the other. Really? Well, when the other comes to your chancery office, Excellency, and blows your head off and robs you of everything that you own, tell me how you feel about the others in that case, because that's what we're all heading for right now. And they're already experiencing that down in the border states. Nothing to do with the other. It has to do with the destruction of this and dismantling of our country. So surely, you can't be seriously buying into this still.
So the truth is, it's very hard to fight that. I'm not exactly sure how, but I know that it begins with the strength inside you. If you are weak, you will never prevail. And that explains their determined effort to make you weak by feeding you poisonous garbage, by trying to make you take medicine that is not at all medicine, by their insistence that you shut up and hate yourself, by their claim that your children are not your own. They have no interest in you having dignity. In fact, your dignity and strength is a threat to them. That's why they closed the gyms and kept the weed dispensaries open.
And what's the Catholic response to all this? Well, coming from the Vatican, Pope Francis's response then and now has always been, do whatever the globalists tell you to do. And this, he's offered still no apology for his monumental role in providing the moral and authority that was needed to lock down the whole world. He just got away with it. And now he's just going to do whatever he wants. Now he's going to be, what did I just see? He's actually going to be welcoming, in the name of diversity, equity, and inclusion, he's welcoming the comedians of the world to come to the Vatican, including Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Fallon and all these characters. You know, that's Francis being relevant. You see? It's all fake and gay. And more importantly, just in time for Pride Month, the Vatican announces that Pope Francis has written a preface to a new book by the most prominent Catholic apologist for the global gay rights movement. Remember, this is June. This is when we get this announcement. Last June, you may remember, Roberto Bolle, the topless, out homosexual dancer entertaining the kids over in the Vatican. I mean, Walter can throw a little bit of that up on the screen. I'm sure you remember that. And now this year, in June, while not celebrating Pride Month officially, he writes, they announced that the Pope has written the preface for Jimmy Martin's book. Here's a little sampling of what Jimmy Martin runs around the country doing and saying.
You gave a blessing yesterday for a same-sex couple. What was that like?
You know what? It was surprisingly moving. The blessings are pretty informal, so it was a couple that I'd known for a couple of years, one guy I knew for a longer time. And we did it in the living room of my house, I mean, according to the rubrics, which is nothing formal and no vestments and things like that. And it was very quick. But I was pretty moved. I was surprised because, you know, to be able to do that publicly and talk about it publicly, and I've known these people for so long, they've been married for 2 years, and they're just good people.
The problem today is a religious problem. It's a crisis. There's a crisis in Christianity. The Catholic Church leads the pack. If you don't like a certain moral teaching of the Catholic Church under Pope Francis, well, just wait around a few minutes. It's going to change. Just give it time. It'll change. Nothing is carved in stone. We're not rigorous anymore. You know, we're rules-based guys. We are love and tolerance. Now, it used to be only traditional Catholics were taking notice, and for about 50 years, we got, you know, lambasted for that. You're more Catholic than the Pope. Well, yeah. Probably so are you at this point. But anyway, used to be just traditionalists were remarking on this. Now everybody's talking about it all across the political spectrum.
We as Christians are not called to be tolerant, and people don't like it when I say that, but we shouldn't be tolerant of sin. We shouldn't be tolerant of rebellion from God. We should have compassion. We have kindness, sympathy, and love. But love without truth is not love. And so the Christian church has bad theology. They don't want to offend people. The gospel is offensive. And because of that, we see a lot of churches that are then taken over by these parasitic left-wing idea pathogens. And it's really too bad because the American church is the great bulwark against tyranny. Liberty is not man's idea, it is God's idea. And so I'm going around to churches, I speak at a lot of churches, trying to encourage them to speak out on these issues. I think without a strong church, the country completely and totally falls apart.
That's it. Yep. And while Pope Francis is out there celebrating diversity and endorsing Jimmy Martin's latest drivel, the so-called bad guys, interestingly enough, are banning the LGBTQ movement because, according to them, its ideology endangers traditional values. Russian deputy minister slams gay nationalism. You see the headline right there. The LGBT movement is based on a destructive ideology, he says, that poses a threat to Russia's culture and population. Russian Deputy Justice Minister Oleg Svirizenko said that at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum last week. The LGBT movement has long been used by the collective West to target basic moral and cultural norms, religious foundations, as well as the institution of marriage and the family. Why does everyone these days sound just a little bit more Catholic than the Pope? I mean, Francis, do you have any answer to that? Any comment? No, I didn't think so. But have no fear, because as Remnant columnist Robert Morrison is reporting this week at remnantnewspaper.com, Pope Francis is getting ready to publish a document on the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Isn't that fun? Is nothing sacred to this guy? Because we all know exactly what it's going to be. Francis will come out and he will tell the world that the Sacred Heart devotion teaches us that Jesus is love, that love is love, and that Jesus is not a rigorist. The Sacred Heart devotion teaches us to love the other on the peripheries, on the margins, and not to get all worked up about those rules and Ten Commandments. That's what it's going to be, you know that. And Robert Morrison writes, rightly so, if Francis were to actually take this project seriously, he will find that the precious magisterial texts on the Sacred Heart of Jesus generally repudiate not only all of Francis's initiatives, but also essentially every novelty promoted since Vatican II. So how seriously are we supposed to take Francis's new initiative? Besides that, The encyclical's already been written. Pope Pius XI already wrote the encyclical on the Sacred Heart of Jesus that everybody needs to read. We'll put a link down below. It was written back in 1928. It's called Miserentissimus Redemptor. And in it, the great Pope Pius XI writes, quote, "The machinations of wicked men have denied the sovereignty of Christ our Lord, making it all the more necessary to make reparation to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Christ our Lord has been denied, and war is publicly waged against his church," which is why the Sacred Heart devotion was so important, according to Francis's predecessors. So is Francis going to reiterate any of his predecessors' teachings? He's going to reiterate that teaching of Pope Pius XI, that Christ must reign, which is how that encyclical ends, you think? Don't hold your breath. So once again, it's left to us, to the faithful, to those who are trying to hang on, as Archbishop Fulton Sheen not only famously said, but famously prophesied that the day was coming when it wouldn't be the bishops or priests who would save the church, but it would be the laity, as we discussed last time. The laity must save the church. And that, friends, is exactly what's happening. Save the church, says Sheen. After Archbishop Sheen talks about the church always coming out of a tomb, and will come out of a tomb this time, he talks about saving the church. He doesn't talk about the apocalypse and it's all over and it's the end, does he? Well, if he's allowing for the possibility that the church can be saved by the laity, doesn't that mean that we all have to look to our own responsibilities to do our part, rather than, once again, as we started the show tonight, hiding out under our beds and waiting for the asteroid, you see? So we've been doing a lot of reporting lately on the Chartres pilgrimage, right? Where 20,000 young people took to the streets of France to proclaim the social kingship of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ in truly dramatic fashion. But I want to say, in fairness, there's good news all around in that regard. Even in the Novus Ordo, there seems to be an awakening going on. There's this massive, and I saw it just the other day in my own town, Eucharistic procession going down the street. A couple of Franciscan priests fully habited with the monstrance going down the street. It was something to see right here in Minneapolis. Now, this is a lay-run Eucharistic procession that's moving all across the country right now in the middle of, you guessed it, Pride Month.
Another Catholic tradition is also making a historic return in the U.S. The National Eucharistic Pilgrimage will pave the way for the Congress. For the next 2 months, Catholics will journey with the Eucharist across the country, following Christ from city to city.
Literally carrying our Eucharistic Lord, our Lord's presence in the Blessed Sacrament, from four corners of the country, all converging in Indianapolis for the Congress in mid-July.
About 100,000 Catholics are expected to participate at various points across four routes, together traveling more than 6,000 miles.
And here's the interesting thing that maybe some of you don't know. The architect of this thing, or at least one of the primary architects of this Eucharistic march across the country, this Congress, is Bishop Andrew Cousins. Now, Bishop Andrew Cousins is, wait for it, very sympathetic to the old Mass, the old Latin Mass. Until recently, in fact, he was the auxiliary bishop here in St. Paul, Minneapolis, and on several occasions, we were so pleased to see that he ordained priests and deacons for the fraternity of St. Peter, down at their seminary, Lady Guadalupe Seminary in Denton. And then on Saturdays, you can see on your screen right now, Saturday, January 6, 2018, Bishop Cousins actually celebrated a solemn pontifical Latin Mass at the Fraternity of St. Peter's Church here at All Saints in Minneapolis. So there are signs, friends, of a revival of the faith going on all around us. Praise God. The largest Sacred Heart flag, this is a great bit of video, the largest Sacred Heart flag in the world was hoisted in Walton, Kentucky, just last Friday, May 31st. Check this out. It doesn't matter how many. I think that's the thing that's really starting to come to the fore. More and more people are starting to realize that even if you don't have a huge, even if you don't have 100,000 people, even if you have a small group of committed men, you can change history. We showed you last week how one committed football player rocked the world. So down in New Orleans, I want to show you for this, and I'll close on this, for this week's Underground, my friend Ross McKnight. You remember him. Ross made headlines last summer for reminding his followers on Instagram that June is for the Sacred Heart. You maybe remember some of this. We'll throw it up on the screen. He was on Fox News. He was all around because the woke mob nearly ran him out of business for defending Christ the King. They failed because, as you'll recall, we were fortunate enough to have Ross on our show, on the Remnant Underground, when he told us that decent people all across the world, all across the country, had rushed to his defense and wound up saving his business and making his foie gras farm more successful than ever, thanks be to God. Well, then he's been doubling down in defense in the proclamation of the kingship of Christ and in defense of the Sacred Heart of Jesus ever since. So this June, here's Ross McKnight once again in action.
I'm Ross McKnight, the co-founder of La Nouvelle Vendée, and we're here today to make public reparation to the Sacred Heart in response to offenses against our Lord with this so-called Pride Parade here in Mandeville, Louisiana.
So there you have it, friends. These are the signs, wonderful signs of people all across the world waking up. This is what it looks like. Again, from NFL football players speaking the truth to power to cardinals of the Catholic Church bringing the old Latin Mass back to the most iconic cathedrals in the world to regular guys in New Orleans just standing strong, men standing up, standing for the Sacred Heart of Jesus in front of a gay pride parade, saying, "We are not afraid. Go ahead. Make our day. We are Catholic men." You see how it works? How contagious it is? Because it's time for all of us to wake up. Yeah, right. This may be the apocalypse. It may be. But maybe it's not. It may be the beginning of the largest Christian comeback in the history of the world. Don't you want to be a part of that? I do. In any case, let's go find out what it is. Let's fight as soldiers of Christ have always fought, as our fathers fought before us. Let's fight. Let's go onto this battlefield and fight. Let's stand for Christ the King. Fight under the banner of Christ the King. Fight under the mantle of Mary the Immaculate, right? Nothing else matters, friends. There's no other way out. There's no other course or cause, course for victory than that. Then long live Christ the King. Long live the faith of our fathers, and you know what? To hell with everything else.